I sat back down and stared at the glass. Whiskey and Pepsi as always. My mind commanded me to drink as always. I reached for the glass and raised it to my lips, hesitating for a bit. The characteristic smell filled my nostrils and the warm burn as it slid over my tongue and down my throat was a sensation more familiar to me than the taste of water. Again, my system rebelled. Within seconds, a wave of nausea rose from my gut, and once more, I hurried to the restroom. Crouching over the dirty toilet, I heaved for the third time in 15 minutes. Mixed with stomach acid, I could taste the alcohol as it flew from my mouth into the bowl, and the sensation made me retch again. It went on like this for hours. Take a sip, throw up. Take a sip, throw up. And so it went, my mind and my body battling like two desperate beasts. Our guest today is an alcoholic. He's a recovered alcoholic. Look, it's called Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within. Our guest is Alan McDougall. Alan grew up in the with the deck stacked against him. He was frail, bullied, and abused. And by the time that he was a teenager, he was a hardened alcoholic. The addiction rode him through years as a working miner, ravaging his health and personal life. And in this memoir that we're going to be talking about today, Alan chronicles his climb out of a personal cave-in with unflinching honesty, humor, and grace. His transformation was a springboard to a new career for him, helping countless others overcome alcoholism and pain. Did you know that there are approximately 17 million alcoholics in America this year, and it's the third leading preventable cause of death? And yet, alcoholics are still greatly misunderstood. Often they're abandoned by the very people they need and unable to escape the pain that drives them to drink. They are unable to free themselves from their addiction. But there is a way out of the darkness. And the first step is looking it right in the eye. Hi, Alan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for asking, and thank you also for the opportunity to speak on your show.
Alan, I have been a alcoholic counselor and every other addiction counselor for 30 years, and I found that really there's no addiction between one addictive behavior and another. They all come back to the same disease process, and that disease process comes from an individual's low self-esteem, not feeling good enough about himself. Was that your case?
Yes, it was, absolutely. I didn't realize all when I was alcoholism. However, when I started to get a clear head and look at my past, and I knew the problem, doctor, was within me. I used to blame everybody for my drinking. You had my job 4,000 feet to the ground. You saw the death of the stuff. You had my bills, et cetera, et cetera. Until finally I sat down one day in a meeting, and someone said, the problem always goes with you because you are the problem. So no matter where you go, there you are. And I did a lot of soul searching and the love of other people. I knew, once my head cleared after 20-some years doing this, that I had low self-esteem. However, I also did things when I was drinking that increased that low self-esteem. So whatever self-esteem I salvaged when I was a teenager, very little, I lost with my behaviors when I was under the influence of alcohol.
So when you were little, growing up, there were a number of things in your life that wasn't the greatest for you, and you felt bad about that, and you felt bad about yourself, and you took up drinking to try to get rid of the pain. Is that right?
Absolutely. The alcohol was magical to me. I remember talking about in my book my first sip of beer when I was probably 11, 12 years old working on the farm, on the dairy farm. And I said, man, like, that is just awesome. And I still feel, even after being sober 28 years ago next Wednesday, I still remember that feeling and just filled the hole in my soul. It was magical. It took away everything. The alcohol was everything that I wanted it to be. And it took away all my nervousness, my low self-esteem, everything. It was just, honest to God, magical.
Right. Now, in an alcoholic or an addicted person's cycle, they use whatever the behavior is, in your particular case, alcohol, to try to get rid of those feelings of low self-esteem. But as you pointed out, when you do the behavior, things happen to you that cause you to have a lower self-esteem. And that kind of revolves like a cycle until something happens. Either you die or you get so low that you think, whatever I can do to get out of this, I'm willing to do it because I don't want to suffer like this anymore. Is that how you felt?
Absolutely. I knew 4 years before I quit, I knew I was in trouble with drinking. And every time I swore to myself that I would stop and look at the issue or quit, I would immediately go back out and start drinking again because I couldn't handle that thought of never drinking in my life. It was my whole life, and it was just a downward spiral. That day you speak about, which was June the 3rd, 1987, that I was drinking in that bar and had that effect, I knew I had three choices to make that day. And it was either go out and buy a gun and commit suicide, and end up in an institution, something with wet brain syndrome or some central nervous system damage, or jail, or face the inevitable, which I did not want to do, and possibly curtail the drinking.
And what did you decide?
Well, I decided to try the Alcoholic Anonymous route. I worked for the United Steelworkers Union. And up in our local, up in Canada, in Sudbury, a mining town, we had an office in that building that helped our members with substance abuse issues. So I went there on 10:30 in the morning on June the 3rd, and I walked into the door and I said, I was a great minimizer because I didn't want to accept the fact that I couldn't do it anymore. And I said, I've been told I may have a bit of a drinking concern. Meanwhile, I was on the edge of a cliff. So they were very kind to me. I answered a few questions. Only 20 questions from John Hopkins. Answered 17 yeses. I say jokingly, it was probably the best grade I ever got in school. However, when I flipped the page over, it feels very more than yes, you have a serious drinking problem. So then they said, let's go to our first meeting. Let's go to an Alcoholic Anonymous meeting. So through all the turmoil, doctor, I had kept my job. I kept my job as a miner because that was my money to buy my food, my drink of poison or my drink of choice, plus maintain a family home and apartment and maintain a facade of normal life. So I said, I can't go to the meeting because I'm working afternoons. And they said to me, the meeting is at noon. And my whole bottom fell out of my life. I just thought, man. So I said, plan B is I'll meet you there. Where is it? And funny enough, it was held in a bar that had a restaurant that every Wednesday had a lunchtime AA meeting. And I went there because it was in a bar. Now, is that a great story to tell? Absolutely not. But it's my story. So I drove to the meeting. I had no intentions of staying. But there's one man, and it's the power of the spoken word. One man was sitting in that meeting, and I speak about him in my book, and he said, and I'll never forget it, he said, "Hi, my name is Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. And if I continue for 2 more weeks on this pathway of recovery, I will have 4 years of continued sobriety." And even as I speak those words on this phone this morning for this interview, I still get the chills and the endorphins going through my body because I took those words out of Mike's mouth and physically put them in his soul. That was my first message of hope.
This program that you're talking about, the 12 Steps program, many, many people have been in it. The problem that I have with the 12 Steps is that according to their own literature, nobody ever gets cured. They're always in a state of recovery. And I think that it's possible to be cured from the disease of addiction. What do you think?
Well, I've had these same similar thoughts, and I've also had the same similar conversations with people that have not been in the world that I came from. But the concept, whether it's real or imagined, of having the daily reprieve makes my life so much simpler to handle today. We only have one day at a time, and if I manage today what I need to do to continue on that spiritual pathway, then I can have it. If I know that I probably have one more, as the alcoholic would say, one more drunk left in me. However, I don't think I have one more recovery. So keeping that in mind, it keeps me grounded, it keeps me humble, it keeps me grateful. And as I wrote on my 5-year medallion a few years ago, on the back of my 5-year medallion, humility plus honesty equals serenity. So I'm not to debate whether I'm cured daily or whether I'm cured for the rest of my life, but I know if I continue on with the daily thought process, it will continue for the rest of my life.
The 12th step is important, and I have a feeling that you have embraced that 12th step in your own life now that you have recovered from the drinking problem that you had. Do you want to talk to that 12th step?
Sure, absolutely. The 12th step model that I've embraced, and you're absolutely right, is just part of what I've embraced in my few 24 hours of sobriety to keep me grounded and focused and to be a person to help others and also to help myself. When I first came into AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, I certainly did not want to admit as a strong, egotistical, strong minor that I was powerless over alcohol, which is the first step. But I certainly came around to the table admitting that I'm the second half of the first step, that my life had become unmanageable. I could not argue with that. My best thinking got me sleeping in ditches and flop houses. So that was my best thinking. So my life was certainly unmanageable. I didn't care about the other steps at that time. I just wanted to get this off my back. I just wanted to get some help. So the 12 steps has really, really enhanced my life. Jokingly, as it says in my interview that I have humor, I always say that I was born on a weekend, on a Tuesday after a long weekend, there are parts missing. So the world of the 12 steps has incorporated to my life those missing parts that keep me whole.
Well, Alan, I wrote a book on the 12 steps 10 years ago, and I revised it a little bit because steps 6 and 7 were basically the same step, and so I put them together, and that opened up another step, and I put in there the step for forgiveness, that you have to forgive everybody who has ever hurt you in order to be able to forgive yourself and be able to accept God's forgiveness. And only after that happens can your self-esteem rise to the point that you can escape the disease of addiction. What do you think about forgiveness?
I'm totally on the same page as you. What I learned about forgiveness, because I certainly thought I had reason not to forgive for a lot of things in my life at that time. But when I went to a 28-day rehabilitation program, which I was sober 30 or 40 days prior to going in, I had seminars. They had seminars there on forgiveness. They had workshops to do on forgiveness. And the first thing they had me do, although I certainly fought it, was to write a letter of my life with my mother and my father, and then that was the beginning of the forgiveness for both of us. So my book is a book of redemption. It's not just a book of overcoming an addiction. It is a book of redemption. And if you want to write a book of redemption, you have to portray the bad parts to get to the good parts. So that's where I got my beginning on to forgive. And I certainly worked those steps. It wasn't easy, but well worth it. I go to retreats every year for a weekend to a Jesuit retreat to do the fourth and fifth and sixth of forgiveness. I do it on a daily basis, and I just incorporated it into my life. However, I say it wasn't easy, but well worth it.
We're talking today with Alan McDougall. His book is called Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within. Alan, how do they get a copy of your book?
Well, you can certainly get a copy of my book at Barnes & Noble. It is also on Kindle. It is also on Amazon. And my new website, I'm excited, my new website is going to be up and running this Friday. And I'll give you the address of the website. It's www.ampublicspeaking.com. And you can certainly order the book online. Or you can send me an email, and I will certainly send you a copy in the mail. But Barnes & Noble carries it.
Okay. If you want to get a copy of my book, Freedom from Addiction, go to www.freedomfromaddiction.info to get some additional information, or go right to Amazon and get it from them. So, Alan, you have had a significant life experience with addiction, and you've come to the 12th step of the 12-step program, and in that step, what are you doing with respect to motivational speaking to fulfill that step?
Motivational speaking came about as a result of a happenstance conversation which sometimes is life-changing, or serendipity, or coincidence, or God working. And it just came as a result of, in my book I talk about my speech impediment as a young boy, and I spoke like Mel Tillis, a country and western singer, but I certainly can't sing. And so the last thing I wanted to do was get up and speak. However, I was invited one time to go to speak. I was alcohol-free for probably a month, and I was invited to go to speak to a community college, to a class of battered women that had a class there, and the teacher invited me to go in. It wasn't me she invited, but I just happened to be in the room, and when the call came, and I went, and I was terrified, scared to death. And I gave my little 25-minute talk, because it says in the world of addiction, in the world of AA, whenever I'm responsible for when anyone reaches out, I'm responsible to help. So I took that motto and I incorporated it into my speech. The speech was terrible. It was 25 minutes terrible. I cried, I broke down, I was raw, I was not a good speaker. I stuttered, but I was real and I was honest, and I got a standing ovation from these students, these women, and they were genuine as well. And they said, "We need to keep speaking because we need to hear messages of hope." So I took a lot of training and courses, and now I don't stutter as much. I do a lot of motivational speaking. I work with Les Brown, the motivational speaker I belong to is Platinum Speakers. I spoke on cruise ships over in London, England. I've been very blessed. And I think that my speaking is to give that message of hope, to be responsible for whatever someone reaches out to be there.
Right. And I would say that in your public speaking and in your ministering to other people in this way, that it on a daily basis increases your self-esteem and puts you farther away from your addiction.
Absolutely. It's healing. It's healing, hopefully, for the people sitting there listening to me or for one person that's in the room. And sometimes it may be just be for me to get up and speak my truth, to have the fortitude and the means of doing that to change people's lives, and also at the same time changing my self-esteem is at a level that I thought was totally unattainable. I really believed I am living my life today totally beyond my wildest expectations.
Yes, Alan, it's amazing how we can start from the bottom and rise to the top as we fulfill our spiritual development. So, Alan, this book of yours is a memoir, and it tells about your life, and it alludes to how you have been able to go from one state to another state and be able to be successful in everything. What advice do you have for a person who is back at the beginning, back where you were before, and not just the alcoholic, but the gambler, the negative thinker, the sexual addict, the overeater, all the different types of addictions? What advice do you have to them, based on your personal experience, which could be of hope to them today?
Well, thank you for asking that question. My advice would be for them is to, if you think you have a problem, or if other people think you have a problem, or you know you have a problem, please don't do what I did. I waited four miserable years. I put myself through misery. I put my family through misery. The people I loved the most, I hurt the most. So if you think you have a problem, you're considering doing something, please don't wait, because every day is a day of misery and a day towards your someone else's demise. So look at the issue, reach out for help. I would suggest to go to, if you're in the world of alcoholics, in the world of alcoholism, to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. It's only an hour a day. It's like buying car insurance. It's insurance that just that you won't go back out again. I can't guarantee you at the end of 90 days you won't go back drinking, but I can guarantee you this. If you do go back to your drug of choice after 90 days of being clean, I can guarantee you all the misery that you had at the beginning of the 90 days. If I may, I also would like to say that society today is a very quick-serving, fast-serving world. And everybody thinks that rehab is a magic answer. And I believe, this is only my belief, and I'm not a doctor, but I believe we set ourselves up for other people's failures by sending people to rehab right out of the workplace or court mandated, and they've never had the time to get the brain clear, the mind clear, of the drug of choice. So they wake up the second week in rehab, and they don't even understand what's going on. So I would suggest strongly that you have 30 to 60 days of meetings, whatever your drug of choice is, then possibly go to a rehabilitation center, spend 21 or 28 or whatever it was, or whatever it is in that state or city or county, and then have a great follow-up. You need to do the follow-up. when I left rehab, it was on my 38th birthday. The director said, "How do you feel today, Alan?" I said, "I feel great. It's one, it's the first thing I've ever completed. Two, it's my 38th birthday." And she said to me, "How old do you think you are today?" And I learned in rehab that our emotions are don't grow when we're in the world of addiction. So I wanted to impress her. I said, 13. She said, "You think very highly of yourself." So we're in a 38-year-old body acting like a 12-year-old child. So do some groundwork before you even think of rehab. Go into the rehab unit if that's what you think you need. And when you come out, have a plan of action for the next 9 or 10 months to get 1 year in under your belt. So that would be my message of hope. And wherever you are today in life, wherever you are, it's a great place to start. No matter what you've lost, you can only go up.
Right.
And how, and just in closing, I'll talk about how we do that.
Alan,
if you break down the word how.
Alan, sorry to break in. We're out of time.
Okay.
Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within, Alan McDougall. Thanks so much for being on the program today, Alan.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.